Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, an eighth worker at the JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley died in the past week. Meatpacking plants around the country have been hotspots for the coronavirus. Workers there are said to be essential workers, but they're not being protected at work, say unions and organisations that represent them. We'll hear from one national organisation on the challenge facing workers who are often immigrant. Then we'll hear another report in our series, The Brink. They're stories produced by students in the Environmental Studies programme at CU Boulder, and they explore issues of social, economic and environmental justice. Today we'll hear about the history of the Fort Chambers site, where militiamen from Boulder trained for the Sand Creek Massacre. What happened on this land and what's been done with it today. John Lendorf joins us live from his kitchen in Louisville for Radio Nibbles. Then after headlines from the BBC, ahead of Memorial Day, we'll revisit a KGNU documentary, Time to Learn, Vietnam Voices. It was produced by Ginger Perry and Sam Fuqua, and it features Ginger sharing stories about her brother, Stephen Tucker Perry, who was killed in the Vietnam War. We also hear from Tim and Molly O'Brien, whose brother was also killed in the Vietnam War. At 9 o'clock, Claudia Craig speaks with David Ignatius of the Washington Post about his new novel, The Paladin. He's a prize-winning novelist who's been covering the Middle East and the CIA for nearly four decades. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. There have been three cases reported in Colorado of an inflammatory disease related to COVID-19 that specifically impacts children. Dr. Sam Dominguez spoke at a press conference on Wednesday, and he said that Children's Hospital is able to treat what's being called multisystem inflammatory syndrome. He said it is quite rare, but he advised parents to be on the lookout for symptoms.
I think what I would tell parents, particularly things to look for, are if you have multiple days of high fevers, that would be a concern to call your primary care provider. The other things that are presenting most commonly with this syndrome is actually pretty severe abdominal pain, and so it'd be another concerning sign that you should talk to your primary care provider about. And again, the things that look like Kawasaki disease, so red eyes, red lips, rash, any constellation of those symptoms together would be a reason to call your primary care provider as well, so they can talk to them about this and whether or not you need to be getting further tested or to be referred to for more specialty care.
The city of Denver is today announcing a large-scale free coronavirus testing site outside the Pepsi Center. The Denver Post reports that Denver Mayor Michael Hancock and Colorado Governor Jared Polis will be at that site later today, and they'll announce the logistics of the new testing setup. It will be a drive-up facility. Widespread testing for the coronavirus has been identified by Denver Mayor Michael Hancock as an integral part of the city's path towards reopening. Earlier this week, Governor Jared Polis announced that anyone in the state with symptoms of the coronavirus could get tested for free, regardless of whether they have health insurance. The city of Boulder announced yesterday that it is closing part of Boulder Creek close to Eben G. Fine Park, effective immediately. This is in an effort to reduce the community spread of COVID-19. The announcement came after a newspaper photograph showed dozens of young people gathering there on Monday along the banks of Boulder Creek. None of the sunbathers wore masks or practiced social distancing. The closures include all parkland and creek bed north of the Boulder Creek path. This is from the eastern boundary of Eben G. Fine Park to the western boundary of the city of Boulder. Eben G. Fine Park itself will remain open. The closures will be monitored by police, and gatherings of 10 or more people will be asked to disperse. Ahead of the Memorial Day weekend, with temperatures on the rise, Governor Polis yesterday reminded people that the pandemic is still going on. It's not a vacation, and people are to recreate close to home and to continue to practice social distancing. Warm temperatures in the forecast for today, highs in the mid-70s, but a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Warmer tomorrow, highs getting into the low 80s for Friday and Saturday, but cooling off for Sunday. Highs forecast right now to be just in the mid-60s with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms Saturday and Sunday. For Memorial Day, expect highs close to 70 degrees. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Thank you. As we have been reporting on KGNU, the JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley has been identified as a hotspot for the coronavirus. An eighth worker at the plant died. In the past week, unions representing workers, not just at that plant, but other workers in the food system that are now being deemed essential, say that not enough is being done to protect the workers. Another essential worker, a King Soopers employee from a branch in Capitol Hill in Denver, died in the past week as well. Now, that particular Denver store has had 11 cases of the virus among employees. It's just off 9th Avenue in Denver's Capitol Hill neighborhood. Presidential candidate, former Vice President Joe Biden, was asked this week whether he thought that higher prices are an acceptable burden for Americans to pay for improved safety for workers amid the COVID-19 pandemic, especially for essential workers like meat packers and grocery, pharmacy and farm workers. Referring to the meatpacking industry, Biden said during the town hall meeting that absolutely positively, no worker's life is worth getting a cheap hamburger. No worker's life is worth that. But what price should the essential workers themselves pay for this? As I said, on Monday, a second worker at King Soopers died at the store in Denver that's at the Capitol Hill neighborhood. This came just after King Soopers also cancelled the so-called hero pay, which was an additional $2 an hour for grocery workers during the pandemic. Well, for several workers now, many representatives of the essential workers have been calling urgently and have been assured that they will get improved conditions and improved measures to protect the workers, as well as proper oversight. KGNU's Claudia Craig spoke with Cindy Benavides. She recently took part in that town hall meeting with Joe Biden. Benavides is the CEO of LULAC, that is the League of United Latin American Workers, and they have been calling for better conditions since the outbreak of the pandemic.
So in March, we started hearing directly from the workers in terms of the level of fear that they were experiencing, marching into slaughterhouses and feeling like their lives were on the line. And, you know, we learned from them that unfortunately the companies were not taking the necessary precautions. And part of the situation, Claudia, is that unfortunately under this administration, OSHA has only issued recommendations and not mandatory standards, which means that there is no accountability for the corporations, which means that if the corporations don't have the PPE or the protective gear to make sure that the workers are safe, it's okay. They're still going to require their workers to walk into work and if needed, terminate them if they don't show up.
JBS plant, it's owned by two Brazilian brothers, the Batista brothers. You talk about OSHA. Maybe some owners feel that they're apart from American restrictions and their workers in JBS, which is the world's largest meat processing plant, somehow they are immune because they are not American.
Everyone who lives and works and operates a business in America should be required to follow all the rules that apply within the country. And so, you know, the thought that a company may be exempted, you know, that certainly is something that the federal government should investigate. What I will tell you is worrisome, Claudia, is that, you know, just as there are multiple outbreaks happening in the meatpacking plants where you have over 20 deaths, where you have over 5,000 workers who have been impacted by COVID cases, that the national precedent that President Trump would enact the Defense Production Act, even amidst of these breakouts that are happening all across the country. And what we fail to understand is that unfortunately that rolls back the safety of all workers in America, safety measures that have been put in place for decades so that our American workers, our workers working across the entire U.S., including Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C., don't feel like when they are going into work, their lives are on the line. And so certainly there's more that this federal government can do. There's more that the corporations can do to make sure that the workers are protected and safe. And that includes slowing down the line, making sure that the workers are not working elbow to elbow.
King Soopers worker died this week of COVID-19 in Denver store. He worked for King Soopers, Randy Narvaez. He worked for them for more than 30 years. Do you think that people generally do not pay enough attention to these essential workers as long as they are there and doing their job?
My hope, Claudia, is that, you know, one day we can wake up and, you know, we can go to do the activities that we did without a mask, without having to worry or be frightful that, you know, we may unfortunately come down with COVID-19 and potentially die. And my hope is that in the middle of this, the biggest learning lesson is that everyone deserves respect and dignity, regardless of what their job title may be, regardless of where they work. And what we're seeing right now is that when it comes really down to it, it is the essential workers, the people who are working at our grocery stores, the individuals at the pharmacies, the individuals at the hospitals, whether it's a doctor, whether it's a nurse, whether it's the janitor, making sure that things are sanitized and clean, whether it's the x-ray technician. It is the meatpacking workers. It is the farm workers who are keeping America running. And it is incumbent upon all of us to demand for protections for them. Because if they get sick, Claudia, then who is going to do those jobs? We're talking about making sure that we have short-term protections so that we have availability of the foods that we desperately need to feed our own families so that we are able to make sure that no more people are dying. And we forget that it's a trickle effect, that when one person in the community gets COVID-19, it means that others could also be impacted. And so we really have to think about this holistically. And my hope is that we are raising awareness and that we're being thoughtful of making sure that we're demanding for basic protections and rights for all workers. And certainly one day to have that respect for the people who allowed so many of us, including myself, to be able to work from home and go to the grocery store once every 2 weeks, just so that I could stay safe.
The response to looking after these workers is not moving fast enough. So what is next? You have been reasonable. You've asked. Somehow, being essential, you just have to put up and shut up and get on with the job. Why is that?
Claudia, I wonder sometimes if we're thinking about this in the right way. And, you know, we understand profits matter for corporations. But when it comes down to it, if the workers are not protected, if they are getting sick, if they're dying, then long term, the chain supply is going to be impacted, which means that profits will be impacted. So it's in the best interest, not only of the workers, but also of the companies and of the consumers in America, that these protections be in place. And the only way I can summarize this is, you know, in connecting with different corporate leaders, certainly, they would not put their family at risk should their family be the worker. So if it was the son, the daughter, the granddaughter, or the individual running the company, would they not want that family member to be in the most safe condition possible so that they don't get sick and potentially die? And for us, it's making sure that as consumers, we are raising awareness that we do have an action that we can take. We can limit the consumption of meat products that we are consuming so that these companies don't feel like they have to continue this fast-paced line, which really puts workers at risk, and also demanding just the basic protections of gear and testing. You know, we think, Claudia, that there's a massive undercount when it comes to the testing. We don't think it's 5,000 individuals who have been impacted. We think it's double or triple that number. And why we think that is because hearing directly from the workers, we know that many workers, when they have gone to the clinics and to the hospitals, they have been turned away. And they're having to drive an hour and a half, 2 hours, simply to get tested. And on top, pay $200 to be able to get that test. How many individuals, one, have the transportation and also have the $200 just sitting there to do this test? So we do think that there's so much more that can be done, not only by the federal government, but by the corporations and also by us as consumers.
That's Cindy Benavides, who is the CEO of LULAC, that is the League of United Latin American Workers, speaking there with KGNU's Claudia Craig about calls to increase worker protections for the essential workers in our food system, the meat packers and the grocery store workers. Several have died here in Colorado just in the past week. An eighth worker at the JBS meat packing plant in Greeley has died, and a second worker at a particular King Soopers branch in Denver also died in the past week as well. It is 8:21. You're listening to KGNU. Well, in 1864, the Sand Creek Massacre occurred in Colorado. More than 150 Native Americans were slaughtered, were murdered. Most of them were women, children, and the elderly. And Boulder has a connection to that. The Fort Chamber site in Boulder is where militiamen from Boulder trained for the Sand Creek Massacre. Well, as part of our series, The Brink, which is a collaboration between KGNU and students in the Environmental Studies program, we're going to take a look at the local connection to the Sand Creek Massacre. Emma Lehman and Marianne Schippel, who are two students at CU, wanted to find out more about the history of the Fort Chambers site, what happened on this land and what's being done with it today. They spoke with members of the Native American tribes that once lived in Boulder Valley, as well as Right Relationship Boulder, which is a local organisation that works to acknowledge and build relationships with Native peoples. Up next, we'll hear that report.
When it comes to the land, it can take us right back to the place of our ancestors. My name is Dara Perez Goodvoice Elk, and I am from the Wind River Reservation.
Dara and many other Native Americans have ancestral ties to the land in Colorado, specifically Boulder Valley, where tribes such as the Sioux, Utes, Cheyenne, and Arapaho lived. In the 1800s, tensions between settlers and Native Americans developed and grew. Settlers feared ambushes from Native Americans, though there aren't records of such incidents. Tensions continued to grow, and in 1864, 100 militiamen in Boulder trained to kill Native Americans at the Sand Creek Massacre.
This property is where the militia from Boulder trained to commit the massacre at Sand Creek. So this is very historically significant to the Cheyenne and Arapaho people and to the citizens of Boulder, because this is very historic and cultural meaning.
That was Geraldine Dakota. She's a member of the Turtle Mountain Chippewa tribe in North Dakota. Geraldine is a founding member of Right Relationship Boulder and is working to build relationships between the city of Boulder and Native American tribes. The property she's talking about is Fort Chambers, where the militiamen from Boulder trained for the massacre. Geraldine explained what's happening with the property today.
The city bought it as open space a couple of years ago, and now they're engaged in this process of deciding what to do with it. Right now, some of it is being leased to farm.
The City of Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks bought the Wells property back in 2019. Fort Chambers is believed to have been on this site, though there are conflicting records about where the fort was actually located. The city has been doing research to learn more about the land and where the fort was located. But until recently, the tribal history of the site was unacknowledged, and tribes were not consulted about the land prior to it being purchased. Instead of having these conversations, the city leased the land to a local farm so that it could continue to be used for farming. So not all stakeholders were on the same page back when the city of Boulder bought and then leased the land. Here's Dara's take on the situation.
I know for myself, and I'm going to speak about myself first, and then I'm going to speak about what I've heard, and especially like on social media. So for myself, I had taken place where they were going to gift it, and then it was kind of like taken back. It brought back old memories of the government and broken treaties. It brought back all of those memories. And then with that came the negative feelings of, you know, animosity and anger and whatever, you know, whatever you want to feel. But once I finally, you know, got over that and resorted back to, okay, so now what? It kind of made me think about The purpose of getting that land was that we could honor our ancestors that were lost on this land. Mm-hmm. It was originally going to become like a memorial site, but also a place for the youth to have ceremony, mm-hmm. for them to reconnect to their homelands. And I always believe when we speak things and think things, that we speak those things into existence. That's how powerful we are as beings. And so for them to do that, for them to lease that land and give it out, it was wrong.
But the city of Boulder and Right Relationship Boulder are working together to right that wrong and acknowledge tribal history. Geraldine shared the steps they're taking.
The city is creating a plan around Fort Chambers that will have to involve all the stakeholders for a really meaningful consultation about the site and what the Arapaho and the Cheyenne people would like to see happen on that site in terms of their ability to have it recognized for the cultural and historic importance that it represents, and for possible uses, maybe potential ownership of some of it, or all of it, or a portion of it, but certainly some uses, because this is the homeland of the Arapaho people.
Moving forward to remedy history, the city of Boulder plans to meet with tribes this summer to develop a management plan for the property. Here's how Dara thinks this will help with the healing process for Native Americans.
I find with doing my healing work, my trauma work, I find that, people sometimes just want to be heard. We hold deep stories that open up different compartments within our body of memory. By opening up compartments of memory, it helps with the healing process. And so when the land was not gifted, that opened up that trauma, the ancestral memory that we hold. I guess if it ever does turn around to where they do want to honor what it is they wanted to, I think that's going to be the thing that's going to bind and tie the healing together for, the people there on the Wind River Reservation, but also the people here of Boulder. Now it's just about making sure that, things are done in a righteous way.
And that report was produced by CU students Emma Lehman and Marianne Schippel as part of the series The Brink, exploring issues of environmental, social and economic justice issues. And we will put all of those stories that we've been playing here on KGNU this week online at news.kgnu.org. It's 8:28 and it's time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy.
Everybody eats on Thursday mornings, and John Lendorf joining us once again from his home kitchen in Louisville. Lots to talk about this week. We're going to start with a little bit of news about the Boulder County Farmers Market, John.
Yeah, the farmers market is reopening on Saturday for walk-up shopping. But like a lot of things now, it will be very different. Basically, if you want to shop at the farmers market in Boulder this weekend or in Longmont, you have to make an appointment, and you're going to be given a window of 20 minutes to shop the market. And you make that reservation by checking in at bcfm.org. The thing is, I worry about tons of people just showing up because the farmers market is open, and realizing when they get there that they can't shop.
Well, basically, I'm sure they have contingency plans in place, but just a reminder, appointments must be made. You get this 20-minute window, as John has said. Now, you can make a reservation online at bcfm.org, bcfm.org. And there's a lot more information about how they're handling COVID-19 and all the various different measures that they have in place online as well. Well, John, you've been learning all kinds of things about cooking during COVID. What are some of the insights you've garnered recently?
Really, what else is there to do but hang around in the kitchen and try things? There's a bunch of things I've learned that I think are really useful. One thing is that almonds and other nuts and also unsweetened coconut flakes taste much better when they are either slow roasted or toasted first. Then you can use them to make cereal or savory dishes or whatever. The other thing you can do is, a lot of people are firing up the grill or the smoker this weekend. If you're going to go ahead and use the smoker for ribs or a head of cauliflower, put a sheet of foil in there and put some almonds in there. So you end up with smoked almonds. A little bit of salt, it's a great snack. The other thing I've rediscovered is long grain basmati rice. It really is, it's stupendous. It's long grain, stays separate, and it smells like popcorn. If you make a big batch, you can freeze it, and then it's ready so you can cook quickly. The other thing you can do is make the rice, or if you're making grits or something like that, use coconut water to make it instead of water, and it'll taste great. If you use coconut milk, of course, it'll be creamy. Now that everyone is getting back out in public, I know they want to eat a little lighter. So one thing I have grown to love are frozen wild blueberries. Not the big, fat domestic blueberries, but wild blueberries. You put them in a bowl, add skim milk, stir it around, and basically you've got blueberry sorbet. And it's a wonderful thing. Not incredibly sweet, but still pretty tasty.
You've also had an epiphany about sandwiches in a hot waffle iron.
Yeah, it pretty much doesn't matter what kind of sandwich it is. Peanut butter and jelly, salami and cheese, whatever it is, you know. Spray your waffle iron, get it nice and hot, put your sandwich in there, put the top down and lean on it until the light changes, and you know, it's bound to taste better and be melty good.
Well, you can find John's collection of Boulder restaurant recipes that were published 30 years ago. That's at his blog, johnlendorf.wordpress.com. And another cancellation, the cherry pie celebration in Loveland, due to happen June 27th. That's a no-go now, John.
It's a no-go, as I'm likely that most of the pie events of the year won't happen, but we'll see how it goes.
We'll have our own pie events here Thursday mornings with John Lendorf joining us live from his home kitchen in Louisville. Bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
Eat the tables, the chairs, the napkins, who cares? You gotta eat if it chokes you. Oh, do have a knish.